We wanted to make sure that we went over the guidelines for respectful discussion. They spell the word respect here along the side. So I'm going to give you a minute to look over those and reflect on one that you want to, that you are going to keep at the forefront of your mind today during our discussion. We're going to do a quick poll. So the poll feature is not turned on for me, but I have a link that I will drop into the chat. So when you get that link, it should take you to a poll where you can answer this question that I just put up on the screen. How comfortable are you talking about racism? And we had one or two people send me a direct message that said comfortable, so that number would probably be more like 10. So we have 8 at very comfortable, 10 at usually comfortable, and 6 at sometimes uncomfortable, 0 at uncomfortable, at the uncomfortable, or sometimes uncomfortable at 6, sorry, and then 2 or 0 at usually uncomfortable and very uncomfortable. Okay. This was our video that we had up on the, now I can't think of the word, up on the website. That's the word I'm looking for. Oh, it paused. Sorry.
My husband and I have been questioning lately whether church embodies the values we hope our kids learn. We want them to learn to engage in honest self-reflection, to recognize and acknowledge their part in injustice, and be empowered to do something about it. For me, being a part of the racial justice group is an important step towards that, on both a personal and organizational level.
Hi, my name is Melinda Illion, and I am a member of the racial justice group. I think that it is important to have this group at St. Andrews in order to identify how we can better live into Jesus' commandment to love our neighbors as ourselves, especially as it relates to our neighbors of color in our community. I am hopeful that I can help make change in our church community that will spread to our neighborhoods and world, allowing my daughters to live in a world that appreciates them for the wonderful people that they are.
Why? Starting well over a year ago, members and groups within our congregation started reading and learning about the racial inequalities in the Lutheran Church and in our nation. The racial unrest during this past year made it clear to me that our congregation needed to respond both in learning and action to help to counter these inequalities. When the church council formed the racial justice group, I felt that I should be a part of it.
Hi. I got involved with the Racial Justice Committee because I wanted our church to make a statement about Black Lives Matter. I found out that first, I needed to educate myself, read books, watch documentaries, listen to podcasts, and join discussions with other church members. Our women's group read and discussed how to be an anti-racist, and that was the beginning. I recommend a book called Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man.
I'm Debbie Szabo. I read the book, Dear Church, by Lenny Duncan, back in 2019. It was recommended by Pastor Elizabeth Rawlings, and I realized how ignorant I was about the systemic racism we have in the entire country. When this group formed, I wanted to be a part of it to hopefully bring about change.
Hi, I'm Mary Davis, and I joined this group because I wanted to be the best ally I could be so that I could help teach my children to be the best allies that they can be. I also joined this group because I believe that standing with the marginalized, listening to those voices, and helping elevate those voices is one way to live my faith authentically.
Hello, my name is Becca Peel. The events of the past year have helped me reflect on my own implicit biases, and I have found myself wanting, and that is why I joined this committee. It is my hope that through the work of this group and the collaboration with the greater community, that we can continue to love and serve all people. And let us not grow weary of doing good, for in due season we will reap if we do not give up.
Hello, I'm Dick Swaysgood. I joined the Racial Justice Group after studying racism and white privilege for a year with the St. Andrews Tuesday Morning Men's Group. I became aware of just how skewed many systems are to benefit me, a European American, and yet at the same time create obstacles for people of color and minorities. I invite you to learn more about why we feel this is important for St. Andrews at our forum presentation.
So that just invites you to the presentation you're already at. So we are going to keep moving forward. That's a little bit about all of the people in the group and their whys for joining this group. And I'm now going to turn it over to Dick Szabo.
Morning. Start with a little background. Some of it was mentioned, but over the last couple of years, members and groups within our congregation have been reading and learning about racial inequalities in the Lutheran Church and in our nation. During this past year, many organizations were posting statements on their websites expressing their position and planned actions related to racial inequities. At the August meeting, a recommendation was brought to our church council to consider having a statement on our website stating that St. Andrews stands in support of the Black community and Black lives. The council discussed this and took the action to form the Racial Justice Group to study, discuss, and recommend actions related to racial justice. This would include drafting a statement. So what's the group been doing? Well, it started meeting in September and has been meeting twice a month since then. One of the first steps was to define the purpose of the group. The purpose developed is really in three parts. A statement, a set of goals, and a list of guiding questions to help focus the work. These are all viewable on the racial justice page of our website. And the purpose is intended to be a guide for the work of this group. And you see on the slide the goal section of that. The group believes that this work will be ongoing and so should become a standing committee. To do that would take action by the council and changes to our constitution. So for now, it's a group. As the group better understands what can and needs to be done, it will make recommendations for action by the church and its members. The group will provide ways and opportunities where we can all learn, discuss, and exchange ideas about racial justice and racial inequalities. And it will work with the leadership of our congregation to put a focus on racial equity in all aspects of our ministry. Now, these goals are intended to be dynamic. As we learn and grow in this work, these will evolve. Some of the actions the group has been taking, put together and proposed the racial justice statement. To identify St. Andrew's commitment to this issue. It's providing information, learning, and discussion opportunities. It's created a list of resources for learning and posted it on our website. It includes books, cinema, podcasts, et cetera. This list is dynamic and suggestions are welcome. It's providing a series of Did You Know articles in our communications, voice, bulletin, website, et cetera. Currently, a new one's coming out each month. You'll be hosting discussions with the congregation like this one. Sometimes they may be a bit uncomfortable. The members of the group have been investigating what other churches are doing. We hope to learn from each other. As an example, Holy Spirit in Kirkland is hosting a three-part workshop entitled Holding Racial Equity in Everyday Practice. Several members of the group participated in the first part on February 20th. Going forward, the group intends to have ideas of how St. Andrew's and its members can make positive change, maybe make suggestions to outreach about organizations to consider supporting. Now, the proposed racial justice statement, although similar, is different from the group's purpose statement in that it's intended to be outward-facing, to let people know who come to our website where St. Andrew stands on this very important issue. And back up a slide, Mary. Anyway, you saw the racial justice statement during the video that Mary showed. The first part of the statement expresses St. Andrew's position. You know, and as you can see, St. Andrew stands in support of the Black community and Black lives. We take our mission statement seriously and try to live by it, to love and serve all people. We strive to serve all of our neighbors, including our Black, Indigenous, and other neighbors of color. We recognize that there is systemic racism and racial inequity in our community and nation. If we accept things as they are, remain silent, and do nothing, we are contributing to that injustice. We follow our values to be serving and loving our neighbors with generosity and justice. Next slide, please, Mary. So the second part's actions that St. Andrew's is committing to take. That we've created this racial justice group. Look for ways that may be unintentionally enabling racism so that we can change those. Provide education and resources to the congregation on racism in our community and ideas on how to counter that injustice. Provide ideas of how our church can be more welcoming and making Black people feel comfortable worshiping with us and being part of our congregation. Make recommendations to the congregation on actions we can take to better support the Black community and people of all races. And we commit to tracking our progress on these and continuing to find ways to love, to better love and serve all people. So this is the proposed racial justice statement. Really, the next step on this is to get it reviewed by the council. Any comments or questions? It's not exclusive now. Maybe emphasizing Black because that's been a group that has been more oppressed than others and probably feel more uncomfortable in white settings. But no, we're certainly not excluding anybody. All people of color are encouraged to be welcomed and made comfortable.
Perfect. So we as a group talked about what we want to make sure we discuss with you all today. And so while we're going through, we're going to be sharing different questions. So the three questions that are on the PowerPoint slide right now are what I'm going to talk with you about. But before I share our answers, I wanted to first pose you with some different questions. So if you guys want to share in the chat box the answer to your questions, or you can just think about them, that'd be tremendous. And the idea of these questions is, again, just to put you in the mindset of what we're sharing on the PowerPoint. So the first question I have for you is, what messages have you received about your identity? So it could be messages from your family, messages from your community, from your friends. What messages have you received about your identity? Seeing that's not an issue, that it's normal for my growing up world. Standard, normal. Okay. What about, next question, what messages have you received about talking about race?
should be avoided. That's divisive. Shouldn't do it. Try to be colorblind. Too political. Yeah, there's a lot of different opinions born from systemic racism. And then my final question for you all is, when did you first realize race matters? And I'll take time to be a little personal. I definitely grew up in a typical white Anglo-Saxon Protestant family and in a very close community, a small town in Connecticut. And for me, I was one of the shows that I loved to watch when I was growing up was Boy Meets World. And that was the best show in the land. It was so funny and wonderful. And the relationships in that show were tremendous. But there was a girl who was black who ended up having a relationship with a white boy. And my grandma, when she came in, said, that shouldn't be happening. And for me, that's why I was like, why not? They love each other. It's perfect. So that was just a realization that I had when I was 8 years old, that race was something that came into play. And so I thank you guys for sharing your stories, even if you are just thinking about them too, realizations of why race might matter and how it can be uncomfortable to talk about. But that's what we're here for. And the reason why we think it's important to have these conversations is that ignoring our discomfort and the effects of white supremacy and racism tells our black, indigenous, people of color neighbors that we either agree or we don't care. And that's not what we're here to be, because as a church, we're talking about loving and serving all people, and that should include everyone. And it's tough because we're not trained to have uncomfortable conversations with each other. As we just shared in the chat box, we were told you just have to let it happen. You just don't talk about it. It's too political, too controversial. So we aren't challenging ourselves to have those courageous conversations with each other. And Mary, if you want to go to the next slide, probably should have did a cartoon after the next one. I just found that this cartoon, Foul Language Comics, has a lot of interesting cartoons for supporting difficult conversations. And I thought that this was good because it talks about how it is difficult for us to have courageous conversations. And what they're saying is, if you can't see it, why can't everyone just stop being racist? And what's more important is that people become anti-racist. Not making things worse isn't enough. We have to strive to make things better. Like fixing a house. You can ignore its problems, but it'll only get worse. Or you can work hard and make it a wonderful place to live. And I don't know how to fix houses, though. That's okay. You've got the right tools. When do we start? In a perfect world, about 400 years ago. So go ahead, Mary, to the next slide. And so these are two quotes that the group found to be helpful in also answering the questions that we had about how we need to have these uncomfortable conversations. The first one is from Leo Flowers and the Gottman Institute Relationships blog, and it's about looking at trauma. And so we have to recognize that systemic racism has existed in our country and that it can be traumatic for our neighbors who have been dealing with that systemic racism. So if we become defensive or critical when we're in conversations about trauma, your partner may begin to believe that they can't trust you with their emotions. And that's something that can affect our friendships and our relationships with our neighbors and community. And another wonderful quote is from Brené Brown from Dare to Lead. If we're learning how to rumble with vulnerability is work. So this is when we're talking about why we have to embrace this discomfort. and it never becomes comfortable, but practicing means that when vulnerability is washing over us, we can hear grounded confidence whisper in our ear. This is hard and awkward and uncomfortable. You may not know how it's going to turn out, but you are strong. You have practiced what it takes. Sorry, the chat is in my way. I practice what it takes to create and hold the space for this. And so that's what our group is also supporting, to try to give you guys the tools so that we can have these uncomfortable conversations. And it's okay as long as we're in a safe space to talk about. Any questions?
I think the next thing that we're going to talk about will continue the conversation. So if you have more to add, that's awesome. I just want to make sure that we get to our next few questions as well. So I think turning it over to Amanda now.
So what I'm talking about a little bit is how do we have hard conversations? And we have a couple of questions, if you want to go to the next slide, Mary. In the interest of time, I'm going to ask you just to put them in the chat, your answers. What things prompt you to speak up on issues about race? And I am a big fan of Brené Brown, and she talks a lot about this. She talks about the reckoning and the rumble, and the reckoning is when you notice you have, oh, that doesn't quite sound right, and you get curious about it, or maybe someone tells you some piece of information, and I know for me, sometimes I get dismissive of it, like, oh, that can't be right. It's so out of what I think of as, I don't know, and then you get curious about it and you say, well, why does this bother me? Why is my reaction to dismiss that and say that can't be right? And then she talks more about the rumble, and that's where you really get into why, what bothers you about it, or you get into these conversations. The respectful guidelines for respectful communication are really good guidelines. And to go a little further into that, you can do things like lean into vulnerability, stay curious, stay generous, validate the other person's experience or feelings. You know, I hear you say this, is that, am I getting it right? Sometimes these conversations are really hard, and it's okay to take a break and say, you know, I'm getting really overwhelmed. Can we come back to this tomorrow or later this week? We need to be fearless in owning our part. And another important thing is to listen with the same passion with which we want to be heard. I know that's something I struggle with. If you want to go to the next slide, Mary. I also came across a kind of a model conversation. The article itself talks about going into conversations not with the intent of changing someone's mind, because that almost never works, but to seek to understand. So I recruited my husband to go through this with me about, he's a supporter of the evil wizard Voldemort, so who must not be named.
Well, he's the most powerful wizard alive. Also, his followers promised me a pretty fancy title.
Interesting. Is there anything you dislike about him?
Well, I'm not crazy about all the murdering.
Well, nobody's perfect. What stopped you from abandoning him?
I'm afraid he might direct the murdering towards me.
That's a reasonable fear. I've felt it too. Are there any principles that matter so deeply to you that you'd be willing to take that risk? And then you can go on through the conversation. So I know we've got some comments in there. I also know we have a lot more presentation to get through, so I'm going to, in the interest of time, I'm not sure who's next, but I'm going to hand it off to them.
Cheryl is next. No, you didn't freeze.
Thanks.
I'm frozen a little bit. Okay, there we go.
The next one about having hard conversations now. Why are we doing this now in the middle of a pandemic and everything? And if you go to the next slide, I think we already know the answer. We've been seeing the summer of unrest, and this whole move for racial justice has been going on for a much longer time. In fact, the ELCA had a statement on racial equity in 2019. But because of George Floyd and because of this all just came up and outrage was felt around the world. There were just demonstrations, not just in Seattle or the United States, but all over the world, people were outraged. And it was just a blatant example of how people's attitudes have created this system that we have. And then we watched Black Lives Matter on TV, and some people even participated in some of the marches. And it was just waking us up. That's what it was. That's how I felt about it. And then we look at Martin Luther King's statement, to ignore evil is to become an accomplice to it. So we realize that as Lutherans, as Christians, we can't just sit back and watch what's going on. We have to speak out and say something and look for ways that we can act. And let's see. And one of the things about the protest of Black Lives Matter that impressed me was that it wasn't just Black people marching. It was all races marching, hand in hand, arm in arm, even with the threat of COVID. And they were making a statement while I was sitting at home watching it on TV. And I knew that it would be good if our church could make a statement at least. And that's what Dick Szabo has come up with. And I support that statement. So the next, you have another slide, Mary?
Oh, too many. There we go.
Oh, yeah. So this, it's not just part of our mission statement like Dick Szabo was talking about, but it's also from Jesus. It's a command that we love one another. Just as I have loved you, Jesus said you should also love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. And I think we believe that, well, I know most of us believe that this is not just the people in our church, but this refers to all people, not to stop at people that are just like us or people that sing the same hymns that we sing, but people from all races and creeds that we need to show love. And I think I'm done. Anybody wants to put something in the chat room as a response to this, or we can just go on to the next question.
The next question is the next person who will be presenting is Melinda.
Yeah. So, Mary, I think we can skip the video, but okay. We wanted to have a quick conversation about when you hear, but if you could maybe put the link to it in the chat.
Yep.
When you hear of anti-racist work, and I think this goes back to what the conversation was earlier, when we hear of anti-racist work, do we think it's a phrase that invites action? Like, we need to be anti-racist. What does that really mean, right? And my view, and I think our view of our group, is that it's kind of a couple things. The first thing is that we need to educate ourselves to really understand what's happening. What's happening with our neighbors of color? What's happening in the world? Like, can we identify systems where racism is happening? The systemic racism is the thing that makes it keep going, right? We've kind of moved past the individual Jim Crow era racism, and now we've moved into this more subtle version of racism that is harder to pinpoint and harder to call people out on. So for an example of something that we can educate ourselves about how racism is working in our world today, you can think of background checks at work. Because we know the criminal justice system is a racist system, by definition, having background checks at work could also be perpetuating racism in our workplaces. In the schooling system, having schools defined by boundaries on a map actually ends up being part of a racist system. And it's like, well, why is that truth? It just is practical, right? You want to go to the school in your neighborhood. But because redlining has been part of even here in Bellevue and here in Washington for so long, that having your schools divided by neighborhoods is perpetuating this racist system. And it's so that's the part where we need to be helping and educating ourselves. And as white people, we can actually take responsibility for dismantling that section of racism. But then when it comes to how can we be anti-racist for our black community, I think that Mark's really true in that we need to follow and support where the black voices are leading. That's our job, is not to say, we need to do this for you. It's how can we help support you in getting what you feel needs to be done? How can I help open those doors? How can I amplify your voice rather than making it about how I think things should be fixed? So the next slide is actually a great video that St. Matthews did. Is that who it's from? I'm trying to remember.
Yes.
Yeah, from St. Matthews, that actually their committee actually put together a video as to what anti-racist work means to them. I would highly encourage you to watch it at some point in time in the future, but it's like 5 minutes long, so we don't really have time to watch it right now. So.
And we're Dick Swayzgood.
Great. Okay. Okay, the question that I want us to really talk about here is, what is the benefit to us of doing all this work? There's some short-term benefits, but there's also some really long-term benefits. So I want to start by looking at our community, our Bellevue community, okay? So I'm going to ask you some questions, and if you get handy with your chat, maybe you can throw some answers out to everybody, okay? And the first question is, in the city of Bellevue, what is the percentage of white people, diversity-wise? Throw out a number. Okay, I've got an 86% from Adam. Oh, I got an 85% white from Beth. Mary says, oh, we got a whole bunch of them, 48%, 43%. How many are white? What is the percentage of white people in the city of Bellevue?
Percentage of white.
Oh, one says less than 50%. Oh, we have a real, quite a varied number of responses to this. In actuality, now the statistics on the Bellevue City of Bellevue website are probably 2 or 3 years old. I think they're from 2017. And in 2017, 50% of Bellevue residents were white. And about, oh, I think it was 34% were Asian, and there was 3% black. And but if you dig a little deeper, if you look at the zip code 98005, I believe that St. Andrews sits in, our church sits in that particular zip code, white is not the predominant race. Asian is. Okay, now let's look at St. Andrews. Throw me out a figure. What's the percentage of white people at St. Andrews? Ooh. 93%. 95%. 98%. Okay, everybody's along the same lines here for St. Andrews.
Yeah.
Any others? Okay, I think 98%. Okay, it has to report our demographics. Can you answer that question for us?
I have the report in my hand that we just filed with the ELCA, but I don't have percentages. I just have numbers of active participants, and it's an average.
Okay. The last numbers that I've got were from our Senate, and but they were quite dated. They were from 2015, and I think at that time we were listed as 92%. Okay. And that was a demographic study of the whole Senate. So what does that tell us? Show of hands, how many of you are Cradle Lutherans? And how many of you, I'm assuming, were confirmed in the Lutheran Church? And how many of you were adult confirmants? Anybody else besides me? I see a couple. Teresa? Okay. So what does that tell you about our church? It says we're predominantly white, and it says we're predominantly Cradle Lutherans. I look back, I've been to St. Andrew's since 1986, and when I look back, we've absorbed a lot of Lutherans from churches that have closed. And I think starting from quite a while ago, there's a church in Factoria that closed, and we absorbed a whole bunch of their members. And then one of our partner churches, Cross of Christ, had some internal strife. I think they had a new pastor, and they had some internal strife, and so we absorbed a bunch of people from them. And just recently, Grace Lutheran in Bellevue closed, and we absorbed a lot of people from them. But when you consider that our community is changing, and our greater community, our greater Seattle area, our Bellevue area, the way it is changing, what does that say for St. Andrew's, and what does that say for the Lutheran Church? So maybe what we should be doing more is trying to learn a little bit about other people's perspectives. I'm just going to throw that out and talk about their other experiences, and maybe chat with our neighbors about their experiences. And maybe we should be thinking, or I'm just throwing this out again, maybe we should be thinking about what we can do to become a more welcoming community, especially to our neighbors and others. I would like St. Andrew's to continue and to thrive, as I think all of you do. But I believe that we're going to have to change if we want to continue as we are. Thoughts?
Question in the chat about why are we identifying by race? And it is important that we feel comfortable identifying our own race, which can sometimes be hard as a white person because there is guilt attached to that, and sometimes it feels wrong to say things like, I'm a white woman, and so as a white woman, this is my experience. But being able to say that also means we are able to then recognize somebody who may not identify the same way we do would more than likely have a different shared experience, just as somebody else who is a white woman would have a different experience than me based on other aspects of their growing up, of the environment they're currently living in, and things like that. So it is important that we are able to identify our own race because we can't ignore race.
Thanks, Mary. I think we need to move on. We have one more question to go.
Yep, and that is my question. So I want to make sure that so that kind of also leads us into, are we, the question that we left for kind of the end is, are we as a group, the racial justice group, concerned about moving too fast or being too political? And that kind of goes along with what I was just saying about how we can't ignore race. It has such an impact on people's day-to-day lives. It might feel political, but it is an important part of people's identity. And to not see, to ignore their race is to ignore part of who they are. It doesn't mean that you treat them differently per se, but it does mean that we recognize who they are. So to say, I don't see color, to somebody who is a person of color is to not see part of who they are and part of their experience. And I will also say that sometimes our meaning me and other people, like I've done this myself, to cause what is usually called a microaggression or some other sort of harm to another person is sometimes our intent or what we're meaning to do not matching our impact. And a lot of times that comes from our learned experiences of, I saw a lot of comments, and I have this experience too of ignoring, not necessarily ignoring race, but pretending that we're colorblind and saying something or doing something, thinking that our impact is going to be different. Like, and so it's important that we do this work. When I was talking to my own students in my classroom one time about something I had done that was really, like, it was messed up and I needed to apologize. And I told them, like, you know, that was really messed up. And as a kid, I was taught to not talk about race. And obviously that didn't get us anywhere because look at what we have now. And they're like, well, that's really dumb. Why don't you do that? So I think we need to not be concerned about moving too fast because there are already people who think we're moving way too slow with this as a nation, as a community, you know, not just like us, the like however many people we have in this group, 30 people we have in this meeting today, but as a greater community, as a greater nation, and as just people treating each other the way we all would like to be treated and acknowledged. So, yeah. Anyone else on the group want to say something? One more thing I wanted to add before we go, and I'm just going to reshare my screen because there's a few things on this PowerPoint that might do better reading than... Oh, now my share screen ran away. Okay, I'm not going to share it. I'm just going to read it because my share screen ran away. One thing that I wanted to make sure of that I also said was that we learn and grow when we enter a place of discomfort. So that goes for things like this, having uncomfortable conversations. That goes to skills like learning a new cooking recipe. Like for anything, we learn from a place of discomfort. So if you feel a little uncomfortable when we're talking about these difficult topics, be it race, be it LGBTQ stuff, when we're talking about those in these sorts of conversations, it's harder to do when we're virtual because there's not as much feedback from one another, but it's still really important that you kind of feel okay sitting in that discomfort and being like, I need to sit and think about that for a while. And that's okay. And it's okay to feel a little like, ooh, and think about that. Please know that you can reach out to us. I think we're all in the book, in the directory. I think Dick Sway's Good's email is somewhere on that website. I'm not sure. So you always can feel free to reach out to us. And we are confident that we can create some spaces, some places for these conversations that feel safe and feel like it's okay to be uncomfortable. We just want to make sure that we are engaging and reflecting in a way that shows love and respect towards one another so that we can have these conversations moving forward. Because there is an inherent risk in addressing issues of race, but there's also a risk in not addressing the issue because silence is not neutrality. So we don't want to just kind of keep going with, oh, we just don't talk about that, because it's not neutrality to not talk about race. Okay. I'm going to turn it back over to, I think Dick Sway is good, since you are our person in charge. I'm just running the PowerPoint to close us out or lead us in prayer or whatever.
First of all, I'd like to thank everybody for participating today, and especially those of you that were, you know, really willing to share your thoughts with our group. I understand that this is something that's probably relatively new for St. Andrews. We're not one really to challenge each other with difficult subjects. So I know that the uncomfortableness can sometimes be a problem when we consider ourselves and our church, you know, one big happy family. But the world is not a big happy family, and I think the more that we understand, you know, where we are in the world and how our interaction with the world affects others, that it will help us to grow as Christians and as human beings and as members of St. Andrew's Lutheran. So thank you all. Pastor Lauren, could you share a prayer for a close?
Definitely.
Thank you.
Gracious God, we give you thanks for bringing us together and for giving us the courage to begin this conversation. The theme of the day is discomfort and being uncomfortable. Help us to find comfort in that, to have patience when we find ourselves wanting to run to a place that is safe. Help us to stay in it when this becomes a conversation we would rather avoid. Help us to see each other as you created us, the beauty, the diversity, all of our differences. Help us as a congregation to move forward with this conversation. Hold us close as we go our separate ways today, God. Keep us in your care. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.
Amen.